I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Anne Filippi, founder and host of The New Health Club Show. I like to invite you to change your mind about psychedelics because I believe we are entering a new era of health, bodies, and brains. And for this, we need new tools, experts, and thought leaders, which you can meet here at The New Health Club Show. Please enjoy. Hi guys, we are finally back with the New Health Club Show, and I'm very excited that we are presenting you the first new episode today of the new season. Because today I talk to Suzanne Kahn and Alice Polican, founders of Bien Health, a microdosing brand from Paris. Suzanne is a biochemist engineer who worked for L'Oréal. Alice is a luxury marketing specialist who worked for LVMH. But then they met and decided to build a great-looking microdosing brand from Paris. To me, their brand was one of the first psychedelic brands that looked really chic and interesting. I could see myself carrying it around in my handbag next to lipsticks and all kinds of other fancy stuff. But today, we talk about a growing community of microdosing fans, why people are actually looking into this right now so much. We talk about how a psychedelic brand can and should look like these days, and we talk about Alice and Suzanne's personal journey, and how a scientist and a fashion and luxury expert got into the world of psychedelics. And yes, we met in Paris, and we had the best eclairs ever. So you can also see this conversation on video on YouTube as usual. Please enjoy the show and Bien Health. Okay, so I am very pleased and very finally happy to do a live podcast with Suzanne and Alice from Bien. We are in Paris today.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see through the windows. So you guys have one of the, I would say, most visible microdosing brands that you just brought out, like, I think a year ago or something, right?
Few months,
yeah. Okay, it feels like a year. And what I really like about it is that it appealed to me, even without meeting you at Soho House at our event in Paris, that because I felt it was something, it was a product that I would immediately kind of be curious about. So let's start with the beginning. How did you get the idea of the Bien universe?
So it all came from my interest in mental health first. Actually, two paths just meet in the same time. So I had a lot of interest in mental health. I wanted to launch a company over there. But the thing is, like, in parallel, I discovered psychedelics through personal experiences. But it was really, it was quite unusual because I was having a retreat with some friend, but recreational, but still like in a quite serious kind of setting. And actually, in the middle of my trip, I decided to meditate and to take like some deep breathing. And what was interesting is that for the first time of my life, I had it's called the overview effect. So I had like this moment of realizing how I was acting, who I was, but also how I was seeing my life for the first time. And it's weird because I'm 31, but at that time I was 29, that being an adult and for the first time just knowing who I was and just like seeing that was very, very curious. So starting that moment, I just became obsessed about just understanding what psychedelic about. And as I'm a biochemist, engineer by training also, so I started reading scientific paper and all of those stuff. And I just spent like a year reading and meeting people, et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, you know what, this is like your passion, and now like just focus on that and try to make your best discovery as broad as possible. And that's how like the beginning of Piana started.
So it basically was strongly connected to your personal kind of story also.
100%, 100%.
So, and what do you think was the, let's say, the main thing before you got into this retreat and then started to microdose that brought you into psychedelics? Because as we know, there are other options like meditation, yoga.
Of course.
And so on.
So I was still interested into meditation, yoga. I was already a bit in that world and doing all of this. However, I think I was just like a bit superficial about it. So I did like a bit in a convenient way and like after work, etc. But I never been deeply into something that was more like into mental health and more like going deeply in my consciousness. And that was the first time. And when I went there, it was more recreational than really like going for, I want to do like a full week of retreat and all of those stuff. It was really like with some friend. It was serious. However, still like it was not like we're a facilitator, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a bit like out of the blue that I discovered that. And that I think also I do believe in faith. So I guess like it was just like that decision I took that a bit changed my life. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Elise, you were saying you were basically on SSRIs.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I grew up in a space where my mom has been struggling her whole life with depression, and I've seen her suffering and, you know, taking SSRIs, being on and off, and nothing was really working for her. So I kind of grew up in an environment where I was already aware of mental health was a big topic in our household. And when I was 20, I went through a very bad depression myself. So I was putting on SSRIs. And it was kind of like nobody will really try to understand what was the roots of the problem. It was more like giving me SSRIs to calm the symptoms without going through the roots. And I kind of managed my 20s by doing therapy. I tried meditation. I tried yoga. I was on SSRIs at that time for like 3 years. So I think I stopped when I was 23. But I always felt like it was very heavy for me. I didn't really know who I was. It was really like a search of, who I was basically. And when COVID happened, it was very challenging for me because I had no stimuli. I had no social interaction. And I went to a very bad place and I had to be put on SSRIs again. And I realized that SSRIs wasn't made for me because I basically didn't have any emotions. So it was working because I was feeling better, but I was not in phase with my emotion at all. And what happened is that I've known Suzanne for 7 years now. We both met when we were working in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And I was really trying to find like alternatives to the SSRIs I wanted to stop, but it's something which is quite addictive as well. So it's difficult to stop. And I was afraid to go back to the place where I was at the beginning of the COVID. And 2 years ago, we were actually in Amsterdam and Suzanne was like, you should do a mushroom trip with me. And we went to a very nice park, which is Vondelpark.
A park.
So we went to Vondelpark, which is now kind of our spot.
Yeah.
And we want to have that moment of the both of us. Have a trip on mushroom. And we went there and I started taking the mushroom and Suzanne guided me through the ceremony, being like, you need to set up an intention. And it was a moment where I was a bit lost in my professional life and my personal life as well. And I took the medicine, because I like to call it the medicine, because for me, it's really something that helped me heal. Mm-hmm. And when I took the medicine, my trip felt like I did a 3-year therapy in like 4 or 5 hours. And I was really grateful that Susan was there because I was going through something very strong personally, like very difficult with my mom. We basically stopped talking to each other like 2 or 3 months before that trip. And when I did that trip, it felt like all the trauma and everything was coming up, but I could identify exactly what was the issue and what was my place within that relationship. And Susan helped me guide me for an hour through, like, you know, obviously I cried and a lot of emotion came back. I felt a strong sense of relief. And that was the first time in my life that I saw the situation, the relationship, and I saw myself in a different way. And from that day, it's very strange, but my perspectives through the world and like myself changed completely. So that was how I was introduced to the psychedelic. So that was with Susan. And then obviously we had the idea, Susan had the idea first of the microdosing brand, which I joined because I always knew that I wanted to be in that space at some point. And I basically stopped taking SSRIs with microdosing. So it's been almost a year now. So I'm not on SSRIs anymore. I'm on microdosing and I never felt that great. So, yeah.
But let's quickly come back to the moment because I think this is probably something a lot of people have that experience that you kind of see one person in your family or your parents taking SSRIs or battling something really, which these days becomes more visible than maybe like 15, 20 years ago. So, and how does that feel if you need to start to take this SSRIs then too? Because it must be like a really desperate moment because you feel like you have this transgenerational thing on your hands.
Totally.
That's kind of the old, hopefully soon the old way of looking at it. But can you describe the moment when you somebody said to you, well, then you have to take this too?
Yeah. Kind of. It felt really strange because we had a very strong connection with my mom. I was her only child. So we were very close together. And obviously she's been struggling a lot. So I was helping her a lot through all that journey. And when it happened to me, I wasn't that surprised, but I was kind of like, I don't want to have the same journey as her in terms of her mental health through life. And how can I improve? How can I work on myself and break that cycle of, like, you know, transgenerational trauma as well? And I felt that the only moment that he was broke, it was when we did the mushroom trip for the first time. Because otherwise I was identifying myself in the exact same way as her, because taking it to the rise, going through like the same things. And it really, that cycle has been break like 2 years ago. And it's really thanks to the psychedelic. So yeah, that's quite powerful. And that's why we really want to open the chat around it and talking about it openly will probably help also more people to,
try. But I mean, let's come back to the time when you guys met in Tokyo. I mean, I was there once by myself and it's a place where you're definitely going to be lonely.
Yeah.
100%. If you want to be, let's go there. It's nice, but it's also like a very kind of challenging place in a way. And if I think about it, stay there longer than 2 weeks, I don't think I would be able to do this. So why did the two of you, where you met basically, why did you go there, why did you go to a place where you know you could be lonely?
So in my case, I was still like a young adult, just like starting my work life. And I wanted to move abroad. And I wanted to go to Brazil, so
the direction.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was like looking for. I used to work for L'Oréal, so I was like, "Oh, Rio looks good. Like I could love a life there." So I was just like pushing everyone to have like an expat in Rio, and then like one of my colleagues introduced me to the head of the lab of Japan, and she was like, "But I was just talking to her in order to understand how was like the expat life." And she was like, we have a position. Do you want to come? And I was like, yes, I guess. And so I just told her like, yes, directly. But then I thought, I was like, girl, you've never been to Japan. Like, is it going to be nice or not? I was like, well, okay, you know what? Like, we will see. So it's a bit like the way I react for everything. I just test and if it doesn't work, it's fine. But at least like I don't have any regrets. So I went there and it was interesting because all of the stigma I had about Japan, I thought that it was overwhelming, a lot of building, etc. And the thing is like, as long as I moved to Tokyo, I just felt somewhere that was so peaceful and it was incredible. And especially like in the neighborhood I was, like Shimokitazawa, it was so like, it's a bit like a parallel world because it was really my vibe, but the Japanese version. And yeah, like, and then like, you know, the French connection is like literally everywhere. So like after like, I think like the second day, I met like a friend of a friend and then like I met other people and then like on and on and on. And then like we met with Anis, I think after like 2 or 3 months I was there and we were doing like those big izakaya and like it was really, really fun. So I didn't felt lonely, I would say. And what I was looking for, it was just like a way to explore as like a young adult. I was really like, you had like something exciting and Japan was the case. And I'm really thankful that I've been there because like, a lot of my friends, I met them there, my best friends, actually, Alice, I met her there. Like, it's incredible. And also the fact that I was somewhere so different from here helped me to break like a bit preconceived idea about everything, but also about me. So I could explore a lot my creativity over there. So yeah.
I think for me, it was kind of different. I did a business school, so I lived in Spain, I lived in China, in Shanghai for a bit during my study. And then I was finishing my study here in Paris. And I think the opportunity came because I was working for the LVMH group and the opportunity to go to Japan came. And it was like a 2-year contract. So they were like, you sign and you go for 2 years. And I think for me, it was kind of like escaping my reality, I think, because my mental health was struggling as well at that moment. And for me, it was just like running away from like what was my reality. So I left. And as Suzanne said, I found Japan very peaceful and Tokyo very peaceful. This is where I started actually my kind of healing journey because this is really the first time that I got into therapy.
In Japan?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It was the only French therapy of like probably the whole Japan.
Okay.
But we know you did the therapy in Japanese. You don't want to
brag. En
japonais, exactly. So yeah, for me, and I met people that really helped me as well. And I mean, I met Suzanne and now we're having a business together. And I mean, most of my close friends. It's true that it's very far. But yeah, it's an interesting country. And yeah, I would recommend it to everyone.
But do you think that the big mental health questions one has, I mean, because as we know, the escapism is in these days, it's not so complicated.
Yeah.
You can go to Bali like for a year and work there like, or whatever. But does the main mental health questions you have, do you have to resolve them in your home country, in the place where you come from?
I'm not sure. I resolved mine. And now I'm based in London, so I resolved mine mostly outside of my country. I never felt that I was belonging anywhere, I think, in a way. Mm-hmm. And for a very long time and through my 20s, I wanted to belong like to a community or like I kind of like change a bit my personality to fit somewhere.
Mm.
And I think psychedelic and the moment I realized that I don't want to fit somewhere, I just want to fit within myself. And now that I discover who my true self is, I can go anywhere.
That's really a good explanation, yeah.
I cannot say better than
that. Okay, good. I can. So let's come to before we go to the brand. So one thing that, I mean, I think connected us also very early on is that we all, the three of us come from this, let's say, luxury lifestyle world. I was at Condé Nast, you were at LVMH, you had L'Oréal. So, and I feel right now is a time where a lot of people who, let's say, grew up in this world of aspiration and luxury and like, oh, you would be Vogue at GQ and stuff. But so right now, a lot of these people who got their identity and confirmation through belonging to brands or companies like that are suddenly feeling that this doesn't mean so much anymore, neither to them nor as it used to be, kind of. So, and I feel it's interesting how many people now, also from this world, like Patrick Cox, who we had at the Soho House event where you were, some of these people really went full into the psychedelic space and now kind of bring their talents with mm-hmm. them. But so how was the, let's say, transition for you? I mean, because I remember in my case, there were some people who were like, are you crazy? You could be like a editor again. And this world is so amazing, although they never worked in this world. So the question would be, how were the reactions towards your change? And then also, was there something in this industry or industries that started to be really appalling to you and just like where you felt you didn't want to engage in this power dynamics anymore?
So in my case, it went quite smoothly. I didn't, it was not like from skincare to psychedelic directly. So the thing is like, I really loved developing product, really loved like all of the creative process of doing a product. I really, really loved doing it mm-hmm. while I was working at L'Oréal. The only thing is that I didn't felt aligned with what I was launching. So it was just like my passion was not there. And, you know, especially I think that a lot of people realize that with COVID, that there is a moment where you want to do something that means and you want to have an impact of like, life is very short. So during that moment where even like before having all of the other stuff like of personal life, like getting married, blah, blah, blah. Like where, what's like the print I want to let? And so starting that moment, I was like, okay, if you want to be proud of you, like, and when you see the issue with mental health, mine, my friends, family, etc., let's try to solve that problem. So it just like starting with a problematic that then I landed up in psychedelic and especially microdosing. So the thing is like I was exploring around psychedelic and I didn't assume to, not assume, but like I didn't felt comfortable at first going like directly to psychedelic, even if I was like very attracted to it. So I was like, yeah, let's try to do an app for, you know, like, and like in between is always lame. Like you need to be fully on, you know? Mm-hmm. And at one point I was like, you know what? Like, no, I'm just going to do like what's interesting, which is the microdosing in here. And around me, people were not really surprised, I will say, that because they know that I do think outside of the box for everything. So they were not like, Susan, what the fuck? Like they were more like, so Susan.
Of course.
Like, yeah, okay. Of course it's Susan. Okay. So it was more like this kind of vibe, I will say. And even from my colleague from L'Oréal, they were like, oh, that's so cool. Like, yeah, I love it. So yeah. Yeah, I will say that it was for my case. For you, media.
For me, it was kind of different. I think like I had a lot of belief also coming from my parents. And I think like looking at society today, like millennials, mm-hmm. You know, our parents didn't have all the chances that we had, you know, to study or like it was a very different time for them. So I think they teach me how lucky I was to have the opportunity to do a business school. And then I was always passionate about fashion and luxury. So I entered at LVMH and worked for a few brands. And then I moved to Farfetch as brand partnership manager. But I realized that I was 29 at that time. And I realized this is all the belief that kind of my parents wanted for me. But what do I really want today? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be 30 soon. And as Susan said, like, life is quite short. So what is my purpose in that life? And I always felt that I have this kind of guidance and that I wanted to help people through their mental health journey, because it started for me very young with my mom and with myself and with people around me. And actually, nobody was really surprised when I told them, because most of people around me, I started talking openly when I was like 27, 28 about like my mental health journey, which is what's something that I was hiding for a long time. And then I started opening up. So everyone was like, it doesn't make sense, because I do see psychedelic as one of the strongest therapy that you can get. And it's such an amazing therapeutical tool. So when I explained it to the people around me, they weren't really surprised, to be honest. But with Bien, we also want to do some merchandising at some point. So that's my fashion background that will come back. Yes. We love the branding, and the brand identity is quite strong, and we really love it. So I think at some point we will develop a bit of like merchandising through the brand.
But I still want to come back to this question, because I feel like if you really get into this transformation, which you at one point you want to, because you want to, you don't want to be the person anymore that might eventually take SSRIs. And I feel like to all the people I talk to about this, including in my own case, it's the same thing. Like, you will start to lose people.
Yeah.
To say it very drastically now. So people will either say, oh my God, I really don't understand what you're doing, and kind of this is crazy stuff and I don't know who you are anymore. Or you just don't match anymore with their system of value, or they don't match with yours anymore. So I think this is, to me, it's always something that is almost like the topic that's rarely spoken about, because the transformation is great and everything. But I mean, if you really would like to transform, then it means sometimes, I mean, like, you know, you might even leave the place where you live, or you leave your relationship, or you leave your former best friend, and you start to have difficulties, even if you can have a normal conversation. So, and is this something that you experienced too?
Yeah, I think like I did experience it. I think when you start healing, you start setting boundaries around you. And everything that you were doing before and the relationship that you had, either they're going to change and have an evolution through time, or you will cut them. And through my healing journey, I lost one of my best friends. That she was my best friend for 12 years. And unfortunately, we went apart. And I think I started healing pretty quickly while she was still at the same stage. And like, unfortunately, it didn't match anymore. So we went away. And throughout my healing journey, I also almost lost my relationship with my mom, because I felt that it was something that wasn't giving me good energy, and I kind of have to stop talking to her for a while just to, you know, heal. And today I'm reconnecting with her because of the different trip I did on mushroom, and I worked a lot on that relationship, and that was my intention for a lot of trips. So it just, I think psychedelic as well makes you a bit more tolerant towards people around you and around the world, because you know your purpose better. So you kind of know how to handle more difficult situation or relationship. But definitely when you start healing, there is like a cleavage between you and other people, that's for sure.
Totally agree. There is the thing about being more tolerant, that's true, because I feel that as we have a different, we shift perspective, where like we see stuff in a different angle, then you also kind of connect with the person in another way. So it feels like it's more, then like you build more tolerance toward that person, because you just see it outside of your just like little box of like just seeing stuff like that. You're just like, maybe there is another point of view. Maybe there is, but that's true that it's a bit like, I don't know how you call it in English, un ressort. just like, you just stretch it out. So at one point you just leave it, so you just escape. And then at one point you just find like a balance. Mm-hmm. So it do happen when you're in this healing process. There is something interesting though, that since I am microdosing and I'm more like, I will say, aligned with myself, I do connect also more easily with people that resonate in the same frequency as me.
Totally.
But like, I could like really connect like day one. And it's crazy because before, maybe I did felt it, but I let like a bit of time until I was like, okay, I love that person. Mm-hmm. But now like I do connect very fast and I can build like very strong relationship quite fast that are sustainable actually, because they, I could stay with those person like for years. But I do let myself being more vulnerable, and maybe it's because I just share more personal stuff. So then like you go more deep in a relationship. Mm.
So friendship and romantic relationships both.
So romantic, I'm with my boyfriend for a while. So
okay.
Let's say that no. But like, yeah, friendship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
So let's talk about the brand. So, I mean, as we know, there are, you could just buy microdoses online. And, but I think what we talk often about, that one of the big problems is still that people would just buy it, or like the legal LSD thing, and hardly have any information about it. And, especially in the pandemic, we had so many people approaching us saying like, where can I buy this? I can't take it anymore. I need some tool to get through this. So what is the main idea of Bien? I mean, it comes across as a very lighthearted, not like super mental health tool. So what is the manifest, let's say, of Bien?
So, the big mission of Bien first is to be a safe and natural alternative to antidepressant. We start with antidepressant, but then it could apply to a lot of things like Adderall, like Zyprexa. But now like we do focus on this alternative to antidepressant. And the thing that there is a lot of point we do address, and microdosing is very powerful. It's something that you use for your daily life. It's a powerful tool. It's something that is suitable, but you need to know the right way to do it. And this is something very, very important, and that with Bien, we want to bring. It's the support. And we, both of us, read so much about the topic in order that we do not want to have someone saying, ah, I took Bien and I don't know, I just like use it like in the most horrible way possible. And which is unfortunately what's going on like with a lot of things that you find online. It's like you buy it and then it's like up to you, like just like you'll find it out. It's not how it works when it's something that is as powerful as microdosing. And especially, I think it's our responsibility as a brand that if we want psychedelic and microdosing to get democratized, we need to be very careful that everything goes like very well. So this is our priority, is to bring like the right support for all of our consumer. So it means that you have a full microdosing guide, a 101 that we explore everything. We have a community where you can share if you have a question or whatever. We have a direct line if there is a question. But most importantly, before anyone just starts taking Bien, they have an onboarding call. So they could ask all of the question. And this is like so important for us. There is also the question of branding. Chantal is to talk a bit about it.
Yeah, just to jump back on what Suzanne was saying, I think, yeah, there is different pillar that and values that we want to make sure that are within the space of the brand, which is first the safety for our client, safety from where the product is coming from, the guidance, as Suzanne said, the support is so important to have sense of community, to have an embodying call, and to make sure that during the journey, any client and anyone that microdose, we are available and there is a service available for them for their guidance if they have any, you know, question. And that's something that make it the product even more powerful to have a specific guidance. And then obviously there is the branding, and the branding, we're really attached to it. I mean, Suzanne is coming from L'Oréal, I'm from LVMH. So yeah, we wanted to make something which is, let's say, kind of accessible to everyone. Because it's true when you're talking psychedelic, like you have sometimes some stigma, even in terms of image. It's really like sometimes, you know, a lot of tie and dye. Or, and we kind of wanted to break that image and make something that was looking like us and something that we loved. And that's where we came up with like bien, which means feeling good, well, in French, with a very subtle little mushroom within the B. So the branding is very important for us. And yeah, as I mentioned, like we're also looking to probably do some merch at some point and some little accessories when you can store your microdose. So yeah, it has to be fun as well. And that's why we selected the color like that blue and pink. So yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, what exactly means bien? Besides, like, I mean, feeling good is like, can have many variations. Feeling good could be like, you just feel okay, you feel not bothered. But what is bien actually, the essence of bien in French? What does it mean?
But bien, also it's the reason why we call that brand like that. It's exactly the kind of effect we want the people to feel. We don't want people to feel like super bien, ecstatic, and
yeah,
because like it's for daily life. You don't want to be like blah, buff. You want to be bien. So like this is what we're like. This is just a feeling, like feeling bien. Like whenever you're talking to people and you're like mon ça va, yeah, ou même bien, bien. It's a word that we use so much and that means so much also. And yeah, we'll say that it's more like bien is a state of mind and an effect where we tend, I would say that in this society, we're going to like the always like the best ecstatic, like a bit like paradisiac kind of life of just in social media and all of those stuff that doesn't really mean something. Where like what really means being feeling good, it's like in your daily life, like just being a bit happy, like, and this is actually what microdosing bring. Like you have those moments of just realizing what really feeling good mean. Like when I microdose and when I'm on bien, I'm really surprised on the little thing that I just like do not notice anymore usually that actually do feel good. Like, I don't know, I'm just going to have a walk in a park and I just see like a super cute dog and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to pet him like for a few minutes and then I feel good. I have like this moment of just like going outside, reading a book like for, and not like scrolling social media, for instance. You have like all of those little stuff, like just waking up a bit early to go and work out, having a drink with some friend, like all of those little stuff that we do not realize that feel good to us, but then do actually improve your daily life. And that's what we are looking to do with bien. It's like reaching that state of feeling, like not like super good, not like low, but like just bien.
And I mean, you use the Mexicana truffle, right?
Yes, yes.
And you also use the protocol of James Fadiman.
Yeah.
So how did you work around these two choices, basically? Because you could also do the Paul Stamets protocol, but yeah, you chose James Fadiman.
So the thing is, microdosing is still quite new. It's a very ancient practice. Like the native community did use it like thousands of years ago. However, the Renaissance is quite new. And whenever you introduce a new gesture to people, first thing is that we wanted to go with the protocol that had the most research and the most data on it, which is the James Fadiman protocol. And the second thing is, we do not want, if you want to introduce something to people, it needs to be as simple as possible. And James Fadiman protocol is the most simple one. It's also the one we do use as as individual.
Yeah, we should quickly say he's like one of the bigger microdosing pioneers.
Yeah, exactly.
And from California.
Yeah.
Just if somebody hasn't heard this.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, okay. But so that means So this is the choice of the protocol, but why the Mexicana truffle?
So it's a very good question. You have in the fungal world, and it's super interesting, you have like plenty of variety and they all have different kind of power. In the case of Mexicana, when you took it in a microdose, it's the best one for different kind of effect that are suitable for microdosing. So improved focus is the one that brings the most focus. It's also the one that improves the most the well-being, and also it brings energy. So for instance, you have other strain that improve, like that you can take to go to sleep, and it's definitely not what, even if actually microdosing do improve the quality of sleep, you want someone to be sleepy. So on those criteria, which is focus, well-being and energy, Mexicana was the top to go with.
But it's also the truffle that's mostly used in the Netherlands in the big truffle retreats, in terms of big truffle retreats when you take a very high dose.
Absolutely.
And I remember like some people I talked to who run retreats would say they choose it because it works on a deep emotional level. So, and then of course, some people say, well, but only if you take a very high dose and somebody guides you to the trip, which of course it's true. But so how do you think this should work on a, let's say, daily basis? Because there was one story around somebody who microdosed LSD, and because he read about, oh, it's going to make me super creative and I'm going to be like the superstar of my company. But then he was crying the whole day. Mm-hmm. Just so many things came up.
Yeah.
So how is this? How do you work around this individual problem, maybe?
Yeah, I think with the medicine and the microdose, it's reconnecting you to your body and your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that for a personal story and some of our clients that we are guiding, for example, the first time or someday when they microdose, they feel like they need to take a nap, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And their goal was like, I want to feel very energized and I want to do a lot of things. And the medicine is telling you, no,
you have to.
Your body is tired. Mm-hmm. Go have a 30-minute nap and go back to your work. And I think the magic of that microdose is that everyone in the society today is kind of in an autopilot mode where you're just like, I need to perform personally, I need to perform professionally, I need to work out, I need to have a social life, and everything is about kind of performance and planning, and it can be a bit overwhelming. And for me, the microdose, it stopped me, and I think a lot of people, from being in that autopilot mode without having any, you know, tripping effects. So you're going through your day, but your day is just going to feel different. You're just going to make what makes you feel more present and more aligned with your needs. So, for example, I was telling Suzanne, last week I traveled a lot. I wanted to do a lot of things. And I was like, okay, I'm in my microdosing cycle. It's going to be fine. And actually, the 2 days I did the microdose, so it was the Monday and the Thursday, I felt a need of like just staying at home, reconnect, meditate more. I worked a bit less on those days. And when I microdosed, it was Monday. I felt super energized, and you shouldn't expect like super strong performance, but you should expect reconnecting with yourself and your needs.
So, I mean, this idea of that you basically perform the whole week from Monday to Friday, I mean, it is something that fell apart in COVID.
Because
people suddenly, well, I can take a nap, nobody will care because I'm at home. So suddenly, I think a lot of people realized how exhausted they were.
Yeah.
So do you feel like this is, from the feedback also from clients, that is something that they absolutely need to engage to just even approach this feeling anymore? Because like we said earlier, you can always do yoga and workout, but then even yoga and workout can become this scheduled, almost like stressful thing. So that you almost wish for a higher power says you don't have to plan if you don't like everything, kind of, for example. How's the feedback in terms of the effect that microdoses have on people's schedules also?
I think, I had some feedback from clients that they just said that yeah, they were just more aligned and that they were just more listening to their body and what they wanted. And the problem is like, even within like, I practice yoga and I do some workout, and there is also this sense of like performance. And for us, for Susan and myself, like mental health is not a performance. It's not because you're going to meditate 10 hours per day or that it's a performance. It's just you need to find your way of well through well-being and through wellness. And it's not one size fits all. Microdosing is a very powerful tool. It works for a lot of people, but for some others, it doesn't. And that's the same for the thing in life. It's not because society is telling you that this is your way through happiness, this is your way through performance, that it is mandatory and that you have to do that. And I think psychedelic, even outside of microdosing, kind of teaches you that what are your own values and maybe not the one that society is expecting from you. So
yeah, but that's a really good point, because let's say one of the big topics in the psychedelic world is that, let's say once this will take over our societies, all these societies will change. But there's also like some problem behind this, because it's like, you could also say, oh, really bad leaderships or bad leaders from countries, if they would only take microdoses or like or psychedelics, then the whole world would look different. So in what way do you have to change as a society or country that you at one point you might not need anymore these substances? And how much do you need to change as a individual to kind of not be alienated also from everybody else? And I think that's what most people are also afraid of if they book a trip. I mean, of course, they're excited and everything, but I mean, the closer the date comes to the, now we're talking about a bigger trip, the more things start to happen to them, the more relationships get rattled shortly before they go into this thing. So the biggest fear is still, can I still adjust to a system or to my family or to my friends? So how is the reaction there from customers? Do they have any, what do they say? I'm always curious, like how their lives, I mean, their lives must be slowly changing also.
Of course. So in the case of microdosing, it's some subtle shift.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything is micro with microdosing. So it's like smooth shift of perspective, of mood, of whatever. So we so far didn't have like someone that said like, I microdose today and I quit my job.
Yeah,
at the empty prepare room.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, it could come out of it.
Yeah, but like I think after a while, or maybe it's like a coincidence and it's someone that wanted to quit his job and microdose the same day. So it's not like it's quite subtle, but then like I do believe actually that psychedelics are an incredible tool to build resilience and to especially adapt to a society that is changing so fast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. I was born in 1992, and I just saw so many like era of technology. Like I was born, there was not internet at my home. Then I had a cell phone. Then like, you know, like, and then I had an iPhone, and now like there is ChatGPT. So there is like so many like things moving on, and it's frightening, honestly.
Yeah.
And the fact that we could build and actually improve neuroplasticity, then like you just adapt way easily to change. And that's how like microdosing and macrodosing are super, like it's the greatest tool to adapt to, especially right now.
But it's also, it seems like you cannot not do this anymore, because the change is not like the, I feel like our normal brains are not
adapted anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For what is actually happening. And unless you turn into some negative person who dislikes AI and everything, it's a whole other topic. But I mean, I feel like sometimes I wonder, like in the next 5 years, how you even manage with a normal, so-called normal human brain to adjust to all of these changes.
But I guess like there is, as actually Alice mentioned before, there is several paths to build neuroplasticity. So there is psychedelic that is a bit like a shortcut somehow, because like it's more accessible. But then you have plenty of other ways. There is so many practice, like in the alternative medicine can find so many things. It's just like you need to work on yourself for sure, because like otherwise, like if you just like quit the game and quit the race, you will be just obsolete at one point with all of this change. But it's not like especially true psychedelic. You can find other ways to coping with a changing society.
I also think there is a big challenge for the next 5 years. It's how are we going to democratize the psychedelic and how are we going to educate a society that is not really aware. I mean, we are aware of
it here. The legal system.
Yeah, the legal system also. Yeah.
As we know.
So the biggest challenge is going to be it's moving fast in the US. We could see like California.
Yeah, but it goes back and forth.
Exactly.
It's a straight path.
Yeah. Basically. So I think it's going to be how we're going to navigate as a brand, as individuals, with those tools, and which country is going to legalize first. And then we're going to need more people within that space to help people who want to enter that world and educate them and guide them, because it's not so accessible if you've never read about it, if you've never heard about it. I think like psychiatric and like, you know, a lot of people medically in that space would probably need to adjust and adapt, because if this is something that, you know, you can start prescribing, it could be like any psychedelic like MDMA, psilocybin, like, we need to take kind of a shift towards that way.
Yeah, but there was one, I think like in 2 years, 1 year ago, was this one clinical trial from Imperial College.
Yeah.
From a researcher and a scientist who actually, to make it short, like the outcome was that it wouldn't really work the way we think it works, microdosing. So it would be, I think it was like a double-blind study where people who got the placebo were just really excited to be there, and they felt as good as the people who got the real dose, kind of. But I mean, that again, and this is something very interesting to me, since the pandemic, I feel like in Berlin, for example, every second person is either doing it or trying it or wants to try it or is looking for this kind of new, let's say, tool to go through your everyday life. So in what way are you looking into science with this? Is this something you're constantly following? Are you planning maybe even like a trial with a university or something? Because I mean, it's obviously that even with the high dose, some people are very critical around this, but especially with microdosing, for example.
So, of course, like, the fact that I'm a scientist, there is I had to at one point to lead research on that, and it's definitely one of our priority is to play our role. And the thing is, the lack of evidence doesn't mean there is not evidence. It means that the protocol might be wrong, and especially as we are seeing it with our company. You have such an incredible result from the citizen science. And when you do it, you know that it couldn't be placebo, because it's just like you just feel it, like there is really a difference between an on and off date. However, it's very complicated to find the right protocol, as in the case of a macrodose, it lasts for 6 hours. So 6 hours, you can definitely do it in a lab. You can put like the right way to measure everything. A microdose protocol lasts for 6 weeks. So already it's complicated. So you cannot keep people for 6 weeks in a lab while the improvement is in your daily life. Also, the lab setting is frightening. Like, it's not like how you, do you feel super comfortable in that ledger? Like, yeah, no. So, and especially also like in the way we measure that, like your cognitive ability, like it's some IQ test, like all of those stuff, it's just not adapted. So we are, I love the challenge actually to think about the right protocol. It just excites me to think about it. But it's something that we need to find the right protocol that adapts to daily life, but also that is well tailored enough in order to get some relatable results. So there is a lot of things to do. And again, it's like very new. So you still have like, we still have like a lot of discovery to learn, a lot of things to adapt. And it's super exciting, actually. But definitely to answer to your question, we are definitely going to do it.
I mean, like in the case of the Californian governor who kind of now took care of that, nothing's going forward very fast. So, and you could see even in America, like there will be a rather medical way that will happen first. While of course, most people might do it right now, but still like the legalization might be stronger connected to a medical protocol, maybe even more than in Europe, like in the Netherlands where we all are. So, but what I find more and more interesting is how these compounds, once we have some, let's say, we kind of practice almost them in a way, like we did with alcohol, like the last, I don't know, 100,000 years. And we, I mean, German culture is very alcohol friendly, the French culture too. So, and I feel like I wonder, how is it if we would actually kind of switch to an alcohol free culture, which is, I mean, it's not, it's already there. It's not necessarily something that is in the future, or like a very, very kind of low intake of alcohol, and then connect like certain substances to certain, I don't know, human experiences. Like, as we know, MDMA is, for example, something that is interesting to do as a couple, for example. And it brings you, I mean, if you have a clear understanding and in a good setting, of course, maybe not necessarily in a club, which I find, for me, I find it difficult. So let's say as a couple, you would say, well, okay, we do this, which some people do, like a couple of times a year, we do this to just reconnect to each other, or to even also have maybe the possibility to talk about things that are uncomfortable for us. That will look very different than in a couple's therapy without a fix. It will be a very hard conversation. It will be difficult. So how do you, what do you think about like we, this kind of, let's say, futuristic scenario that we would actually connect several different psychedelics to several different occasions or ideas that we always connected to alcohol so far? Like if you go on a date, you have drinks, not one drink, you have drinks. So you have the first date mostly kind of buzzed. Is there any kind of something, is it good? Might be not so good, and so on.
I think like coming back to the topic of alcohol is one of the most addictive substances, which is totally legal. And it's something you use for a celebration, or well, you had like a bad day and you're just having a glass of wine, and it's totally accepted within that society. And it's one of the most addictive substances that you could ever get. And it's, you can buy it in any corner shop or supermarket. I think like work with microdosing, like the day I microdosed and a lot of clients, we did realize that the alcohol intake is reducing. I think because your well-being is just way better. So you're less craving a substance that's going to make you feel better. And you think the alcohol is going to do that. I'm still drinking from time to time. It's like I didn't stop the alcohol. But I definitely change the way I was drinking before, for sure. It's more something like, I want to have a nice taste because I love wine. And it's not like, yeah, it's, I don't see it as a relief tool, you know, while psychedelics are still very stigmatized and they are a relief tool and they are a well-being tool. So I think we need to change that vision, and again, it's education. But I think in social settings, it's also, and we had some client that actually did the experience and we did it ourselves. We also reduce alcohol, because if you take like 2 or 3 microdose to go to like a social, a party, or it's just giving you a little buzz and you sleep better. You're not hangover the day after.
So true.
And socially, it's just make the connection stronger, I think.
I think that.
You know, while alcohol, I think like it gets a bit blurry at some point.
Yeah, also there's houses called like happy drunks or
yes,
angry drunks.
Yes, exactly.
Mostly angry at one point.
Yeah, so yeah, totally.
If it's too much.
Yeah.
But the two of you, so you are basically also still on your own psychedelic journey, right? I mean, besides the whole company and everything. So in what way will you look into other trips and other experiences with other substances? Yeah, definitely. How and when?
Usually,
what would you say is like, oh, this is something I want to do next, because I feel like this has something to tell me, because as we know, all the psychedelics have maybe different informations. Also, some are tryptamines, some are not tryptamines, like MDMA. Some people even say it's not even a psychedelic, but it has very interesting information in terms of bonding and attachment, whereas truffles have more like a, in a high dose, have maybe more like a very spiritual experience ready for you. So what is your next thing?
I think my next one, I mean, with Suzanne, we usually do like a trip of mushroom like 3 times max a year, because you need
together.
That's usually we do it together.
Okay.
Yeah. It really created as well a bond between us. And Suzanne introduced me, and like, it's also really good for brainstorming and you know, so we love doing it together. I think maybe my next one might be ayahuasca, because I feel ready to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I started with the mushroom, I did it a few times, and now I think the next one could be ayahuasca for me, but I want it to be a real journey and a real trip. So I will probably do it in South America, and where is it legal to do it? And really like go there and set a very strong intention on it. So that might be my next one. Yeah.
In my case, the first thing is also it's very important for me to have a substance that is legal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so in the, as you mentioned, like I was in South America, for instance. So this is like the first criteria. And unfortunately, there is not a lot of substance that are legal or easy to find. And also like, of course, it's for legal reason, but it's also like, and I think it's more my background as a scientist. I really value the way something is done. And I do not trust like something that's, I don't know where it come from, like which lab, like who did that? Is it something that have been done wherever, like in a kitchen? Like I would never eat that.
So in some kitchen.
Yeah, and like somewhere random, like I would never eat that. So it's more like for those reasons. I would, right now, like there is, I'm definitely open to other substances. But I feel that there is so much to explore with mushroom that I really want to go deeply. And it's a bit like the way I work in life. I want to like explore everything in one thing and then like go to the next chapter, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel that with mushroom, I still have like a lot of huge room to still explore. So for now, like I will still stay there. Ayahuasca is super interesting, but I do not feel ready yet to do it.
For ayahuasca, you mean?
Yeah, I do not feel ready.
Same here.
I will do the one trick for you guys and share my go for it.
Yeah,
but I think with every psychedelic, and I mean, this is something that's coming back, set and setting, and the set is actually very important. Like, where, how do you feel? Where are you in your life?
But still, I find it so interesting that to some substances, you seem to be really immediately attracted yeah. to. And others like, oh, maybe another time. Like, if, and I cannot really tell why exactly. For example, ketamine, I find I was not attracted to it. I mean, I had a therapy experience, but I would not say, oh, can I do another ketamine mm-hmm. therapy? Because I found the feeling, I mean, it was very helpful, but it was a weird feeling to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, for example, kind of looking into and planning like an MDMA, a guided MDMA session, I feel like this is something, this is definitely the thing I feel like this is my next topic to explore, because it's so related to, let's say, the topic that I'm working on with myself, like how can I connect on an intimate level with people, which I always had trouble with. So it's so interesting how substances mm-hmm. show us so in a way, okay, oh, there's something that you want to might look into.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I just find it fascinating how people, how different the journeys are of people, mm-hmm. what they actually discover at one point. And what they...
And it's something interesting. I talked to a very interesting psychiatrist actually, also working in the in all of this psychedelic, he's like psychedelic integrator and also a psychiatrist. And he was telling me that the dosage and the substance help you reach different level of consciousness, mm-hmm. different depth. So, and this idea, like, I feel that we all have the answer inside us and our intuition guide us to that. So maybe like unconsciously, we know that this is what we need right now. So depending on our problematic. So that's why we are drawn to one substance or another and a dosage or another. And that's how like we just like
mm-hmm.
everyone based on like it's problem and solution. So based on your problem, you just go to something. And maybe like in my case, like my problem, I feel that I could answer them with mushroom. Maybe like for others, like maybe you have like some with ayahuasca that could be also not, I would not like problem and solution, but I'll say explore.
Yeah.
Like you have stuff you want to explore through like different lenses, different way and different paths. Like it's just like different keys.
And what do you say if somebody out of in your community or contacts just tells you, oh, you just want to do drugs, be honest, mother?
In my case, it do happen a lot, but in my case, like actually I do not take like any drugs. Like I'm really like my and all of my friends know it. My entourage, I'm really not like, it's not my go-to.
No, but I mean, most people would think
you
have a microdosing company or you're looking into psychedelics, which means now you can have like a framework.
Yeah.
Just doing drugs.
Yeah. But
some people still have that perception of the use.
The thing is like, I would say like personally, I do not really care about what people think. So like they could think whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, I don't care because I know who I am, really. Mm. And even if I wanted to do it for this framework, I'm like, yeah, what's your problem? But in my case, it's not for that, not at all. But yeah, like I just don't care about what others.
It's also a result of psychedelics that you don't care so much anymore.
Yes, yeah, even exactly. more.
I think it's just like, you reach a point where you're like, I'm just going to do whatever I want and not thinking about what people.
Because that's exactly, I had this one very high dose retreat also. And I had this experience that I was dying as a person right in the beginning.
My God.
I know, but it's actually, it's
basically what you
want. Like, this person should please go that you were before a little bit.
True.
And I was lying down for the trip to start and then dying. And then I saw myself like dead, and then the first thought was like, oh, now I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And it was the first thought I totally remember. Like, this is when the trip started.
Oh my God.
So it is so interesting how we still think we can do everything today and we're in this free society. Like we said earlier, we can live wherever we want, don't have to have a monogamous relationship anymore. We can have everything. and still people don't really do the thing that they really want to do. That's super interesting to me.
Yeah.
Is this an experience that you have too in your community also, in your microdosing community?
I think microdosing is more subtle. So it will be through a cycle of like 6 weeks, you see the improvement, but it's really one step after another. When I think when you do a macrodose, it can be really life-changing because it's going, the neuroplasticity in the brain is going so fast and you're reaching level of consciousness that you probably never experienced if it's your first time, that it can be really life-changing. And this is why we said to everyone that asking us question about, you know, psychedelic, you have to be ready to change. If you don't want to change anything, you shouldn't really do it because, you know, like it might be really game-changing and life-changing and your perspective might shift. It's not like the first time I took mushroom, I was like, I'm going to throw everything away and just change completely my life. But it's true that within the next 6 months, I broke up with my partner at that time. I also changed job. I mean, it took 6 months, so it wasn't like from a day to another.
Yeah.
I integrated the trip, and obviously like with therapy, it's also helping, you know, to the integration after the trip. But yeah, it can be very life-changing. But for microdosing, it's way more subtle. I think it's really including some psychedelic and mushroom within your well-being routine just to, you know, have a mood boosting and feel way more relaxed throughout your life. But it wouldn't be something that makes you take like wrong or like or very strange decision in one cycle.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
It's also about the intention you're putting, whether it's like in a big macro or micro dose.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that whenever you have like even a big trip, and whenever we had with some friends, and the one that were the most like skeptical about it, nothing really happened to them because they didn't plan to change. So they saw some funny color, they had like a bit of fun, but nothing happened. But the one that really actually let go and actually embrace and were comfortable on exploring, that's when like you have a bit of diagnostic. I would say like, but still like whenever you finish a trip, like a lot of things are very clear, like, okay, I need to work on that and that. But it could like just fade out like a mirage if you do not work on it. It's really like your intention to then move forward and do stuff. So I will say that you do have, you have like some big shift and stuff, but you need to have the intention to do them. And that's where it go in that direction.
I think it depends on the intention you're putting, especially for a high dose. How I see the brain is like you have little drawers that are full of information that can be good ones, bad ones, like a lot of trauma that you decide to face or not face. And every trip, the moment you put an intention, there is some of those drawers that are opening up and you start processing what's inside them. And every trip, I feel it's different because different drawers as keep on opening and further ones, so you can reach different levels.
Yeah,
that's really true.
Yeah,
it's like things fall away.
Yeah,
that you, and then you feel like, oh, this didn't come up in my trip.
Yeah,
for example, where I thought this would be the number one thing that I would be thinking about.
Yeah,
in general,
and
there was nothing there.
Yeah, and there is one thing usually. When you start a trip and there is an intention that you don't want to go that road,
but it's coming,
you have to go that road. And it's going to come to you anyway. So the medicine knows, so you have to go that road.
Mm-hmm. And so true. How should a psychedelic brand look like these days?
A psychedelic brand? I will not say that there is just one way of looking. You have... right now, at least, we have a big thing to do with democratization. So democratization and legalization, as it's the two biggest topics. If we want to democratize it, we need to make it as simple and as supported as possible. Mm-hmm. And if we want it to be legalized, it needs to be within the right framework. So it's very important to pick like the right people to do it, like the to make like the right filter, so you're sure that, because everything could collapse very fast. So it's very our responsibility as a brand, but also the community of brands that are working in there, to really respect both of them. Then like the aesthetic, like I mean, like it's for everyone, everyone have its own taste. We do believe that actually doing something that looks reassuring and that have a beautiful aesthetic and something that we would be as consumer drawn to. And we did actually something that we love. So we tend to attract people who have the same taste as us that finally buy and adopt bien kind of way. But aesthetically speaking, I mean, like some people will be more into something like very minimalist, other more like earthy tone, etc. Like it's for everyone. I would not say that I have like one specific go-to. In our case, I believe that all of the quote of psychedelics, tie and die, and like funny mushroom face, blah, blah, blah. This is not like...
But this is not like
obvious. The Amsterdam
like, this store. Is not, yeah,
it's like a magic mushroom gallery.
Exactly. It's not. It's actually not fine. But then it's our point of view, but it's not serving the democratization of it.
Yeah.
As it's like so much more than just that. Like you can do so much more than that.
I think there is one thing as well. And as co-founder, we have to be the face of the brand in a way. Mm-hmm. And sharing our own personal story like we're doing it today, it's very important because it's opening a way for other people to do it and feel reassured. And sharing our past through psychedelic can really help. So being like kind of the face of the brand, it's really important to us. And sure. We really want to talk openly about, you know, any topic. I'm making sure that, you know, I'm taking care of a lot of our client, like we have chat sometimes directly, and like I'm making sure that everyone feel reassured and that the onboarding call are going well, that we are matching mm-hmm. their needs. And that's something that's really important. Like before it gets too big, we want to make sure that we have the exact right feedback and that we are going on the right way with the customer. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's really important to us.
That's so true. And actually, you said something, but it reminded me of something. The fact that also there is so much stigma, even with microdosing. And people will be surprised if they see who are our consumer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who are they? I mean, not personally, but what kind of people?
So you do have people that will say like normal people. Mm-hmm. We have some moms that are here because they have a postpartum.
Yeah.
We have creative people. We have entrepreneurs. We have people who are working in our past company. You have like corporate kind of position. You have people in finance. You have lawyer. You have like all of those
creative
people.
You have artists. Yeah.
You have everything. And it's not like what I think that people will think. It's just like counterculture kind of profile. Like we do have most of our time, all of them actually, they all have like a regular job and they all have like, they are not coming for like party or whatever
with us.
Yeah. They're here because they have like a really intent to work on their well-being. So yeah.
Interesting. Mm. I mean, you were saying like, I mean, you can start to talk about this now and we have a much more open conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Goop has turned 15 yesterday
mm-hmm.
and it seems like
Thursday.
They actually, Gwyneth Paltrow contributed in some way also to some narratives or discussions that were not there 15 years ago. So, but I feel like, I mean, as we know, the American culture is always very open in terms of therapy and people would tell you over a Starbucks coffee like that you just met that they just saw their therapist and so on. But here in Europe is this culture is still kind of very, like I say, repressed, but it's still very, oh, don't say you go to therapy kind of, although everybody does it. So, and I think like Germany and France and maybe England too is still very in the stage of not admitting things or not being open about things. And I think we are all more in an American mindset almost, so that we can sit here and talk chatting about MDMA and you going to ayahuasca. So, and how is your experience in, let's say, also in this Parisian or French culture you live in? Because I can just say in the German culture, besides Berlin, if I would go to Munich, let's say on a dinner, or Frankfurt, people still would think like, oh, this is really crazy. And you think this will be ever. So it's still something that's very weird. So how's this, let's say, opening topic coming along here in France?
Yeah, I think like my first, like I had a depression when I was 20, as I mentioned before, and I felt so ashamed that I disappear for like 3 months because I couldn't face even my best friends, or like only my mom and my dad were aware of what was going on. And because it was so not accepted by society, I felt like I was a failure because I had a depression, and like I was very lucky in life. Like I had almost everything that I wanted. Yeah. I was a student at that time, and I was like, why am I feeling this way? Like, so I didn't told anyone for a very, very long time. And I think when I started therapy, like I start talking openly to my friend, being like, I'm going to therapy. And they were like, ah, and I could feel like they didn't want it to have that conversation. Like I wasn't sharing much, but just saying that, you know, I'm taking care of my mental health right now.
With therapy. Basically.
Exactly. And like most of my French friends were like, you know, not wanted to talk about it. And I remember one day I was actually in Paris and I was picking up my SSRIs at that time when I was still on SSRIs. And one of my friends, and I arrived at the restaurant where some friends were sitting down, and they were like, where were you? You were late. I was like, yeah, sorry, I went to the pharmacy to pick up my SSRIs. And I could see the look of everyone like, poor girl. And I was like, and I was talking about it very openly at that time because it was like almost like 8 years after the first time that I really struggled with my mental health. And I could felt in the air that they were in this like awkward moment. Mm-hmm. Like, why is she talking about that? Like, this feels to awkward. It shouldn't be. It should be something that if you talk about it openly, well, that could help a lot of other people. And I wish when I was 20, I had this type of podcast, and social media wasn't really a thing. I mean, we had Facebook
Yeah. A topic.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, before COVID, you could say it was just
totally
not say it.
And today, sharing it and seeing you see people going through the same thing as you, it's just so powerful. And it gives people hopes, and like you can basically find your own way and your path through mental health, through psychedelic or something else. And for me, that's what makes the difference today. And we need to be part of that.
So true. So true. There is something, however, I feel with mental health in France, that people will feel comfortable talking about it whenever it's finished.
Yeah.
But not during
your process.
Yeah. So it's always like when you win a bit the situation, you're like, I did overcome this. I did that. I went through a burnout. But during the burnout and during the moment you're feeling bad,
it's still like, any information.
Yeah, I feel that there is still like a bit this thing of even we do accept for others, but for ourselves, it's still like there is some still like past to do on there, I would say, as a society. We're just like accepting that it's not shameful. And yesterday it was the mental health day, and sharing your story.
Today.
It was not yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah, it was yesterday. It should actually be every day. So everyone
I mean, to me, what becomes more and more fascinating is, yes, I mean, obviously, you know, we also now through social media, you have these information about what happened in Israel, and it's like a collective trauma that's coming back for several countries for several reasons. And this is also something that is now very, you know, you can just really talk about it and post about it. But I find more and more fascinating with psychedelics that what if we would reintroduce them back the way they were once used, kind of like, I mean, not always replacing alcohol in this way, but also to implement some substances as in a celebration context, or like in a just going into nature and just contemplating some things, or just as a founder team to just say like what you did, we go into Wandel Park and just think about our next business model, which it always comes to me another bit, like business insight comes to me always in trips. It's really, I mean, and I know I could never have this without psychedelics. So is the consumer or the customer of Bien, is it somebody who is interested in that? Or is it rather somebody who is in the middle of a mental health challenge? Or what is the customer you would like to cater to?
I will say right now, as it's still like we're still in the democratization phase, I will be more like focusing on the mental health kind of journey, which doesn't mean that whenever people are adult and they do what they want with it. But still, as there is a lot of things to do and to democratize and to work on this thing that is bigger than us, that is the legalization, democratization, we're still going into that path. But then like as things are going to move on, definitely like we could see a change in society of its usage, back to the roots of it, like definitely, but still like in this first stage, we keep it like into the mental health kind of perspective. Mm. Especially for microdosing, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, and what is the bigger vision in 5 years? Where's Bien going to be in 5 years?
So actually the big mission for Bien, we were talking about antidepressants before, but we are not saying that antidepressants are bad. They are good for people. The issue is that they are just like overprescribed. And it's the case for so many things, like for Adderall, for instance, like it's overprescribed. And we have this issue of super addictive substances.
Opioids, basically. Yeah.
That they are prescribed. And you have like the statistic of frightening. You have one prescription out of two that is done without a diagnosis. And this is horrible because you do trust your doctor, you are not going to question like, what is this, this, and this. And so the whole journey goes without any kind of friction. You just have your prescription, you go to the pharmacy, you get it, and then you're like locked for so many years without a way to get out of it. And you can get just like into medication for so many years. And while we think that microdosing can be a very powerful tool to be an alternative to it, is that microdosing, if you want to stop, it's easy to stop. Like, you can do like
several addictions.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I was someone who was on SSRIs and took me like 3 months to get off it. And it was a challenge, and Suzanne can attest. Luckily, I was like, I had microdosing introducing a bit at the same time, so it was helping me, but it was very, very difficult, while microdosing is not the case. I think in terms of vision, it's really to become like, stopping the over-medication and becoming one of the leader.
The alternative.
Leader, alternative within that space and helping everyone with their mental health with something which is potent, natural, and organic, which we are producing in a very cute farm, which is 1 hour from Amsterdam, that we visited recently.
He's amazing. He's so passionate about the topic also. Like, and we have this chance also of working with just people that are passionate about psychedelics. And it's so interesting. Everyone is there for like a deep purpose and not just like, I'm going to make a bunch of money. Like everyone is like going there for a very precise purpose of making life more beautiful and more healthier. And it's amazing. Yeah.
That's great. Famous last words. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anne. It was so nice. So nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much, Anne.
Thank you, Anne.
Hey, and thank you for listening to this episode. Since I have you here, I just wanted to remind you, please follow us on Instagram, The New Health Club, on X, The New Health CL1,
on LinkedIn, and please subscribe to our newsletter on Substack. I'm very happy if you are a returning listener and customer and fan of the New Hearts Club.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.